Hi and welcome to the Politics Roundup Show with me, Maria McAvoy. We've got a bit of a weird show this week. Instead of a variety of stories from all over the world, we have one very important story from, well, it's from the US, but it affects Britain as well. This week we'll be looking at the Guantanamo Bay Detention Centre in Cuba that's operated by the United States of America. There are constant reports of ill treatment, torture and limitless forms of abuse coming from the prison, where the majority of men held there have not even been given a fair trial or any trial at all. As part of his campaign in 2008, President Barack Obama promised to close the prison created by his predecessor, George Bush. But almost five years on, Guantanamo is still open and still exercising the same cruelty. In today's programme, we will speak to a variety of people and activists about the goings-on in Guantanamo, American politics and the campaign here in the UK. Obama said in a question and answer session this week that he intends to close the Guantanamo Bay prison, with the argument that closing it will not actually affect the safety of American people, and having it open actually differs from the American ideology. He is not willing to free all those detained, but those the American government still view as a threat will be moved to other supermax facilities that will have their security further enhanced. Now, whether these supermax facilities will be actually any better remains to be seen. I mean, the idea of being called a supermax rather than a maximum security, it goes one step further than that. So whether these prisons will actually be better or worse, that's all a bit vague at the moment. But many of the prisoners have gone without trial, as I said earlier, so moving them to another prison would not make the situation any more just, really. They should be first charged, tried, and then, if convicted, sent to one of these prisons. But then again, I think any trial now will be quite skewed. I doubt whether they'll be able to have a fair trial, because most juries coming in to observe a prisoner that's been in Guantanamo, and the fear of terror in the US at the moment, I think it would be hard to actually have a fair trial at all. But they should still endeavour to carry one out anyway. The captives will be moved onto United States soil, and therefore should fall under the United States law, which means they should be entitled to their Sixth Amendment rights that states, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed. Which obviously, that part will be hard. It continues, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favour, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defence. Now, there's a range of things within that Sixth Amendment that will kind of be impossible at the current state of things. It's going to be very hard to have an impartial jury because they've already been held as terrorists for so long. So, and there is a lot of hatred towards people who could be assumed as terrorists in the US, especially recently following the Boston bombings. They're on a kind of high blood pressure, if you will, attitude towards it all. And as for they'll be informed of the nature of their cause and the accusation, the charges a lot of the time are unfounded, and it's something they haven't received as yet, being actually informed of the nature and cause of the accusation. Confronted with witnesses against them, a lot of them is just held on suspicion rather than fact, so that evidence will not be able to be held in front of them. And to have the assistance of counsel for his defence, well, there are a lot of human rights lawyers getting involved in the issue, so actually that would make it easier for them to have these trials, because it's something they've already got people there willing to fight for them. But yeah, I do think that a lot of the Sixth Amendment characteristics will be hard to carry out in American law, because a lot of the reasons behind the being held is unfounded, especially with Sheikh Amir, who we'll be talking a lot about soon. So whether or not these trials will be allowed remains to be seen, and at the moment it seems the prisoners will just be moved around the country to other similar institutions. At the moment they've lost all their rights under the Patriot Act, which I completely disagree with anyway. But as people now as people who have had their basic human rights taken away, being on United States soil means they should then fall under the United States Constitution, one can only hope. But until all those rights are fully reinstated, then it will not really be good enough to just move them around. They should be moved to somewhere where they will receive a fair trial and will receive basic human rights, like right to food, right to just not having to be not being beaten on a daily basis or tortured. Anyway, this is what Obama had to say earlier this week.
Critical for us to understand that Guantanamo is not necessary to keep America safe. It is expensive. It is inefficient. It hurts us in terms of our international standing. It lessens cooperation with our allies on counterterrorism efforts. It is a recruitment tool for extremists. It needs to be closed. I'm going to go back at this. I've asked my team to review everything that's currently being done in Guantanamo, everything that we can do administratively, and I'm going to re-engage with Congress to try to make the case that this is not something that's in the best interest of the American people. I don't want these individuals to die. Obviously, the Pentagon is trying to manage the situation as best as they can. But I think all of us should reflect on why exactly are we doing this? Why are we doing this? The idea that we would still maintain forever a group of individuals who have not been tried, that is contrary to who we are, it is contrary to our interests, and it needs to stop.
Obama now has a lot more wiggle room in his policy than he did in 2008, because obviously now he doesn't have the confines of another election ahead. He doesn't have to worry about will he be made Prime Minister, that is definitely the wrong country, whether or not he'll be elected as President again, because it's not an issue for him, because obviously you can't have more than two terms. So he can now say what he says, say what he wants to say, even if it is unpopular. The main problem with Obama pushing forward this policy is not having the support of the Republican Senate. As long as Congress is Republican, he will struggle to pass through any overly liberal ideas. We just look back at Obamacare and trying to get through affordable healthcare. That was a struggle enough. Hopefully, since it should be just a general idea that human rights are something to be proud of and something to aspire to, that the Republican House will actually still have the same ideas that these things are just ultimately wrong. I mean, there are a lot of arguments that he could put forward a presidential decree, or which he wouldn't need the Senate's approval for, but that isn't solid enough. It's such a big part of American politics that it kind of needs more authority than that, and he does need the permission of the Congress, because it's so important. I guess terrorism is such an important issue within the US at the moment, and what has been since 9/11 really, and as long as this idea of fear and scare tactics from politicians is going on, then it's not going to have the great support that it needs. But you still have to admire the guy for trying. Guantanamo Bay has always been an issue for any person with liberal attitudes or a sense of common decency with compassion towards fellow human beings, something I feel that the guards of Guantanamo must be completely devoid of following the actions that they're quite happy to carry out on a daily basis. Reports have been coming out of Guantanamo since its opening of its methods of torture during questioning and dehumanising treatment in the prisoners' day-to-day lives. I've heard such harrowing tales just being here at RFB and speaking to people that have worked to close Guantanamo, like Jackie Chase, our big boss lady. She works with quite a few people, and we've had people come in who have, well, people, a pet that Omar has come in, who has actually been in Guantanamo and produced a programme, and he was a really interesting person to meet. So we do hear a lot at RFB about it, and it really startles you that these things go on. This radio station has a strong connection with the Close Guantanamo campaign. We have campaigned continuously and have made a vast number of programmes on the issue, particularly including the case of Shaka Amir, a British national who's currently being held in a prison. No evidence has been filed against Shaka Amir, and Obama has stated that he is due for release, but he is still being held there. and we'll go on to talk about that further later on, which is with Joy, who works with the Save Striker Amir campaign. The big human rights issue that has come to the forefront of American politics this past couple of weeks and helped to drive Obama to urge the closing of the facility is the protest of hunger strikes being carried out in the prison. Currently, 100 out of 166 men there are taking part in a campaign of hunger, and some have been on the strike for months. Hunger strikes are not a new form of protest in politics or even within Guantanamo Bay. A really interesting film to watch if you're interested in the struggle of a hunger strike is the film Hunger, starring Michael Fassbender. It's a very powerful film. He plays Bobby Sands, an IRA member who died after a prolonged hunger strike in prison. Hunger strikes are a legal form of protest that show that people carrying out have lost all hope as they have in Guantanamo. But now prisoners are being tied to a chair and forced through a pipe that is inserted up their nose and through to their stomachs. People within Guantanamo and people who have suffered this form of brutality, really, have described it as having razors passed through your body. So it's an extremely painful thing that they have to go through, and they don't even get their right to protest. This process can be unpleasant, and the restraint's painful because they're being held down while force-fed. The process of force-feeding takes away the right to protest and should therefore not be allowed. It's illegal to prevent it, to be honest. Officials at the prison are saying that they are carrying out force feeding as the prisoners are suicidal, so they're trying to starve themselves to death, and therefore are mentally unstable, so should not be able to carry out the protest. However, the men on hunger strike are not suicidal, nor are they mentally unfit. They are just showing their anger and frustration against their captivity and the horrible treatment they're suffering. I remember studying the force feedings of suffragettes, looking at the images and finding the whole thing totally barbaric. It's a terrible, absolutely horrendous thing to go through, the hunger strike, but I think it shows the strength of their convictions, and to have even that taken away from them, it's another case of their rights being taken away, and it just, how many more rights can they take? One of my colleagues, Tom, carried out an interview with Dr. David Nicol, who published an article in the New England Medical Journal, which is a very prestigious journal within the US, especially within the medical profession. The article was about the horrors of hunger strikes and force feeding. He also produced a letter to the American government to stop force feeding prisoners, which was signed by 250 medical professions, showing that all medical professionals believe that it's absolutely repugnant.
So here's the interview from Tom and Dave.
I read that you initiated a letter in March 2006 urging the US to stop force-feeding prisoners in Guantanamo Bay. It was signed by 250 medical experts. What was the American Medical Association's reaction to this?
Their response in 2006 was they didn't respond. Or rather, they responded that they also opposed force-feeding. Declaration of Malta, but I pointed out that the doctor in charge of Guantanamo was actually a member of the American Association. They didn't reply. So, in fact, their response this weekend, I think, has been significant for them of their own bat to write to the Pentagon, pointing out that doctors shouldn't be breaching his ethical principles. I think is extremely important.
So, how much influence do the American Medical Association actually have over doctors at Guantanamo Bay?
That's a very good question, and in some ways, when you're dealing with a place which is outside of essentially international law, and the kind of declarations which organisations like the American Medical Association or indeed the British Medical Association sign up to, have actually got very limited role in international law. So legally, it's actually quite difficult to do anything. In fact, by way of analogy, if you think, the American Medical Association also opposes doctors being involved with the death penalty, but clearly some healthcare professionals are involved with executions. So legally, it's actually quite a difficult issue. And also, I would say the difference between the way prisoners get treated in the US compared to the UK is different. Until 1974 or thereabouts, It was actually policy to force feed prisoners if they were on hunger strike in this country. But that changed, actually, after basically a death in custody. There was an IRA prisoner called Michael Gohan. And if you remember, in the early 1970s, the IRA wanted to be considered as political prisoners.
Yeah.
And as part of that campaign, went on hunger strike. During one of those hunger strikes, Michael Gohan died through the force feeding, basically.
Yeah.
And that introduced a significant degree of uproar both in Britain and in Ireland, which led to these declarations opposing force feeding. Kind of complicated.
So what rights do the patients or the prisoners at Guantanamo Bay actually have?
In reality, absolutely none. And you know, part of the issue is that essentially the doctors are basically being used as a kind of medical cudgel to enforce state policy. Now, it's quite wrong to suggest people are trying to commit suicide. Essentially, these are prisoners who have got no rights in the sense that they've got there's no court process. They've been cleared. Many of them have been cleared for release, yet some years ago. Yet no action is being made to release them, in part because of the U.S. Congress has almost put handcuffs on President Obama. That unless he can guarantee these people will never commit any crime again, and no more than you can convince me you will never commit a crime again, or vice versa, then they won't be released. So in a way, it's not surprising that dozens, if not over 100 now, are going on hunger strike, because there is literally no way to leave Guantanamo unless you're in a coffin. Now, that may sound dramatic, but that's literally true. In the last, I think, 3 years, no one has been released from Guantanamo unless they're dead.
So what else can people do to aid the prisoners in Guantanamo Bay? Is there anything that we can be doing?
I think there just needs to be increasing amount of pressure put on our own government, who've said that people like Shaka Rama, who's a British resident, who's being held in Guantanamo and being cleared for release, should be released. So, you know, when both the UK government and the US government saying that it should be released, you know, basically it should be made to happen. And it will not happen unless there is a significant amount of pressure on our government to put pressure on Congress, basically.
Dr. David Nicholl, thank you very much.
It's quite a sad but upsetting truth that it is that people don't get to leave Guantanamo unless they're in a box, and that's horrifying. And now, even if Guantanamo does close, it just seems like they're leaving, but leaving in a cage now. So it's leaving in a coffin to leaving in a cage to go to a different detention centre. But it's really interesting to hear about the force feeding from a medical point of view, as well as obviously a humanist point of view, because everyone will disagree with force feeding on the idea that it cancels out protest, and also it's quite violent and painful. But it coming from a medical professional, how truly horrible it is. It's a really interesting way to look at it, and just makes it more of an upsetting thing, really. And I spoke about the film Hunger, which is about Bobby Sands, but actually Michael Govan didn't died throughout hunger strike, but actually died through force feeding. So that's also a really interesting thing, that it's such a painful experience, and holding someone down as well can be quite violent. So they're taking away their right to life now through this violent act of force feeding. I mean, I learnt today, to be honest, because I suppose I live in a world where I don't tend to hear about all the horrifying things that happen in the world. I mean, as a political journalist, I read a lot of horrible things that go on in the world, more than I possibly like to, but it's part and parcel of the job. And also, to be a campaigner, you kind of have to look at the horrors to realise really how lucky we are to be living in the UK, where it's not the type of thing that happens to people here. And although it's happening to a UK citizen, which shouldn't be allowed and is bizarre to me, but I've learned today, I've known about Guantanamo for years, but I learned today that Guantanamo is not the only prison of this kind in the world. There are horrendous torture camps all over the globe, in places like Africa and up until recently in Poland,
which actually I was told that the prison in Poland was a former Nazi base and then was taken over by the American government as a prison. And when the people from the nearest town found out, it obviously spread throughout the country and the government was overturned for it. So it does show that majority of the world does think prisons like this are abhorrent and shouldn't be allowed. But I think it's interesting that a country that fought against Nazism would take over a Nazi prison and create their own form of camp. So it's a really interesting issue, and I'm interested to see whether there will be big campaigns to shut the rest of these and whether or not it would have a knock-on effect. I mean, a large number of these detention centres have been closed, but some still remain open. And if the number of these prisons is just one, in my opinion, that number is still too large. I want to find out more about the prison, about these other prisons throughout the globe, and how if Guantanamo were closed down, how that would affect these prisons. So I spoke to Clara Guttridge, former secret prisoners investigator for Reprieve, who knows a lot about this issue, to find out more about these other sites and on her opinion of Obama's new revelations and the closure of Guantanamo. And she had this to say. We're joined now by Clara Guttridge, who can tell us a bit more about Guantanamo and also other prisons like Guantanamo. So what's your take on the new developments with Obama declaring it's going to close?
Well, it's excellent that Obama has finally made a commitment to closing the prison and to negotiate with Congress to get their support for moving all of the prisoners either to something more appropriate on the mainland or to their home countries.
So we were talking about earlier about Guantanamo is just the tip of the iceberg. There's more camps and prisons like this all over the world. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, from the beginning, Guantanamo was the kind of the PR element of the US's global system of secret prisons and renditions. In the years since 9/11, the US operated many prisons overseas, and conservative estimates suggest that up to 80,000 people have been through the system during that time. More latterly, after 2007 and 2008, when there were commitments to close the overseas detention facilities after various scandals, the US has changed its tactics such that it doesn't really run so many. It doesn't really run prisons overseas anymore in that kind of a way. But what it does is outsource detention so that other states do dirty work, but the US still benefits from interrogation.
Do you think that now that Obama's come out and said this in public again, that there were actually more hope that these types of prisons will be closed out?
I mean, the problem with Guantanamo is that Obama does not have the support of Congress to close the prison, and so the legislation that currently governs the transfer of prisoners from Guantanamo Bay, which is called the NDAA, does provide for a procedure that has to be gone through for the transfer of every prisoner. Now, that procedure is kind of, nobody has been released through that procedure, and it's because of that legislation, essentially, that closure of the prison, that releases of prisoners dwindled to essentially a standstill. Now, under the current legislation, there is provision for a waiver whereby Secretary of State for Defense can essentially authorize for somebody to be released without going through the procedure that is required by the legislation. But the problem is that it essentially represents too much of a political risk for the Democrats, so that waiver has never been exercised. So really what Obama is saying now is that he wants the support of Congress, he wants the support of people who aren't just in his party, and a commitment to closing the prison without him having to kind of lay his political future on the line through transferring people home to their own countries.
Just lastly, hypothetically, if Guantanamo does close down, do you think it will have a domino effect on the other prisons?
Well, I mean, the large U.S. prisons that were being operated by the U.S. have largely closed or have been transferred, partly at least, to the control of other states. But what the closure of Guantanamo is a relic, really, of an old system. What it won't touch is this new practice of outsourcing detention, which is what the United States has really been doing overseas certainly for the past few years. So, no, it won't touch U.S. funding for prisons that are being run in countries like in Somalia or in Pakistan or in other parts of the world where people are being held by foreign states, but where there's access by U.S. personnel or there's close interaction between U.S. personnel and those that are holding the prisoners. So it won't make a difference to that new strategy that's happened.
Well, thank you for your time. I'll let you go now.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Okay, we're now joined by... The Close Guantanamo Bay campaign is an important venture on purely a humanist level. Ending cruelty to fellow human beings should be the aim of every person. But that sadly isn't true. If everybody were a bit nicer to each other, I'd probably be out of a job. Under those circumstances, I'd gladly take redundancy, to be honest. There is, however, an added connection to the campaign for people in the United Kingdom, and that is the case of Shaka Amir, a British national who is being held without charge and evidence in Guantanamo, and has been there for 11 years. He was arrested in 2002. No, sorry, he was arrested in 2001 and was brought to Guantanamo in 2002. He's been due for release since 2007 because the Bush administration had to admit that there was no evidence to fairly hold him. Yet he still remains as a prisoner there. I mean, that's a long time to be due for release, but yet still be held in prison. He's an interesting character to read about. He sounds like an absolutely amazing man. He's become an unofficial spokesman for the rest of the prisoners. His official job is to translate, and he speaks about 50 languages. So he's been able to talk to all the prisoners there, and he seems to be the person always coming forward to the guards and trying to negotiate terms and things like that. He's also been referred to as the official morale booster for the people in Guantanamo. And it must be quite hard to be a morale booster in a place without morality, even though... So he does seem like a very interesting man. And possibly that's why he has been held for so long, because he knows everything that goes on there, because he can speak to everyone because of his great linguistic skills. And even if he is released, they're now saying that he should be sent to Saudi Arabia, where he's born. But he was there as a boy, really. He moved over to the UK very early with his wife, and he's got 4 children now that he hasn't seen for 11 years. So if he's, they're saying if he's released, he'll be sent to Saudi Arabia. That's not really sending him to where he's from anymore. It's where he's born, but it's not really his identity anymore. He's a British national. His family is here, his life is here. And to send someone that far away, I mean, although there is currently a debate about whether the UK should stay in the the European Union Commission for Human Rights, important faction of the United Nations Commission for Human Rights is that the right to a family life. And to send him to Saudi Arabia will go against that. So there should be more of a fight to not only release him as a British national from our government, but to release him to where he belongs, in Battersea with his family, not in Saudi Arabia, thousands of miles away. It's absolute madness. The campaign for his release has become quite a big movement within Britain, but sadly not big enough. It's not something that you see on television daily or in the news. It's not, I mean, I trawl through news sites all the time. Obviously, it's part of my job to go through all the news sites and learn more. It's part of my degree as well, being a politics student. But it's not something that's going up there enough. I mean, there are a lot of people campaigning in the UK, but the government's certainly haven't stepped up to the mark and recognised the people campaigning. So maybe there is need for more people. I mean, there was always certainly more need for more support in all categories of protest and civil indecency, which is currently what's going on. I interviewed Joe Hertsham, who's a prominent character in the Save Shaka Amir campaign, or SSAC, to learn how the campaign is developing, or as it seems, sadly, not developing due to the British government just not standing up and taking notice. Okay, we're now joined by Joy, who is one of the main campaigners for the Shaka Amir campaign in the UK. Hi, Joy.
Hi.
What is your reaction to Obama's speech this week?
Well, it's very pleasing that President Obama has at last revisited his promises that he made when he first took office. But he has to follow his word with action. It's no good having a review, because by that time, people in Guantanamo, those poor people on hunger strike, will have died. They're into very dangerous days. It's over 80 days that they've been on hunger strike. And we're very, very concerned, especially for Shaka Amer, the British resident, whether he will survive. They are being force-fed, which is, again, a form of torture. It's against international law. So that is no solution. What Obama has got to do now is to free those prisoners who have been cleared for release. He's been called to do that by people in America, and people of high level are calling on him to release those prisoners who have been cleared for release. And Shaka Amer is one of those. So he has to do more now. He can do it. He is the president of America. He has executive powers. He can do it now.
In the email you sent us, you spoke about the vigils at Parliament Square and at Westminster. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Well, we're going to maintain a daily vigil outside Parliament until the hunger strike is over or until Shaka is back. There's supposed to be a full debate in Parliament, but guess what? The end of the session is coming. There's a new session in Parliament after May the 8th. And in the new session of Parliament, we probably may have to wait until June for a debate on the floor of the House of Commons. They've had one debate in Westminster Hall. It wasn't a full debate, but what more can they do? They have to act now. Too late. But we're there to show that we are not tolerating what inaction and failure of our government. They should do action now. They've got to go to Guantanamo and get Shaka home and for Guantanamo to close, because Obama's realised this is a stain on America's reputation, and it can't be sustainable. It's wrong, and he has the power, so he must act now. There is executive power. He could use it.
Even though he does have the power of the executive and obviously can make presidential decrees, do you really think he has the enough power, because he'll have the support of the Senate and the support of the Congress? Or does he really have the power to push it through by himself?
Well, he has got powers within the Congress legislation. In the Act of Parliament, in the Congress, it was called something like the National Defence Authorisation Act. And within that act, which is renewed every year, he has got a waiver, which means that the Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel, the new guy, all he has to do is to certify that the country to which the detainee is being returned is a safe place. And we say the UK is a very safe environment. We have no recidivism. That means that people aren't going back, even if they were involved in any unlawful or terrorist activities. Those detainees that came back here, all of them are part of the community. There's no possibility that this is not a safe, trustworthy place for somebody to be returned. We've had returnees, we've had 15 already, that were in Guantanamo. All of them have taken their part back into the community and are themselves campaigning for Shaka's release. So what more does he want? This is a very safe country for Shaka to return. He needs to come back before he dies. His home is here, his children are here, his wife is here, the community are here. Many of them have signed the e-petition when we got over 100,000 signatures. What more does the government need to act? This is just ridiculous. They're sitting on their hands. They're on their knees. They should get off their knees and act to bring this poor man home.
This is a thing that affects Shaka more than other prisoners there. He's dual citizenship with Saudi Arabia. What's the, if there's an issue with him possibly being sent there, why would he be sent there rather than here? And if he will be sent there, what will his reception be?
Well, this is absolutely outrageous. He was cleared by Obama's joint review process. And he was cleared to go to other countries. There was no mention there of Saudi Arabia. So I don't know where this has come from, because Shaka's got documents that have told him that he's been cleared for release to countries where he can be transferred to. And clearly, it means his home country. And this is his home. Now, he left Saudi Arabia as a teenager when he was 17, about 30 years ago. So he doesn't want to go back to Saudi Arabia. Who would? It's the most... it's a country that has the most repressive a community and society in the whole planet. So why would he want to go back to Saudi Arabia, where he would be put in prison, isolated, and probably on a charge that he would have to agree to, or he would be silent forever? It makes no sense. Other people that have returned here were also from, their origin was from countries of concern. And like Shaka, they had indefinite leave to remain. They have been recognised as long-term residents of this country, as Shaka has. He has a wife who's British. He has children who are British. So he should come back to this country. Saudi Arabia, they tried to force him to go back to Saudi Arabia already, and he has refused. He needs to come back here. Saudi Arabia is not his home. His home is here. He hasn't been living in Saudi Arabia for 30 years. So why send him to Saudi Arabia, where he would come to harm? Other detainees returned here. They came from countries like Libya, Algeria, Iraq, Jordan. They didn't want to go back to those countries which they fled from. They came here for protection. It's outrageous that our government seem to accept, oh yes, he has to go back to Saudi Arabia. No, tell America that we want him back here with his family. This is, you know, I can't believe that our government has been so little and has so complacent.
Can I just ask, do you think that Obama's policy of moving the prisoners to different prisons within the United States is a step in the right direction, or just yet more procrastination?
I don't really think that after so long they should then be put into a supermax prison in Illinois or wherever, so that they could rot away out of sight. I think that there is one feature. If they were in America, those that are facing a charge, they would at least be in the federal system. But who knows what opportunity they would have to defend themselves when it's many years, over 10 years, 11 years, since they were in the country where they were abducted from. They wouldn't have the opportunity to get the information or the evidence to prove their case. It would be probably not, and it would take more years. How many more years how they suffer? Those that can be released, the first thing Obama could do, of those 86, of 166, 86 have been cleared for release, let them go, and then give a fair assessment, a review, for those that are still there, kept indefinitely without charge. And those that, there's 48 that he says he doesn't want to, Obama thinks he hasn't got enough evidence to charge them, repeat them. No. That's another absolute injustice. Those that are facing any form of charge, they should have a fair trial in the federal system now, immediately.
Being moved onto United States soil, would that not then mean that they come under the Sixth Amendment, where they should be entitled to a speedy trial because they're now on United States soil? Because the issue at the moment is because they're not, they're on Cuban soul is that they don't not entitled to the freedoms of the Bill of Rights and the American Constitution. So will that not mean that once they're moved onto prisons within the US, so they will then get their Sixth Amendment rights and possibly be able to have their trials?
Yeah, but you have to be charged in order to have a trial.
That's a good point.
Many of them have not been charged. There's very few that have, actually about 20. Yes, those that are facing a charge and a trial should have a speedy, fair trial.
Sixth Amendment says that you, if you're arrested, then you are then allowed to have a speedy and fair trial, and you must have a speedy and fair trial for it to be.
If you're arrested and you're held without charge, that is wrong. That's why they should be released. If there's no charge, you can't have a trial. In fact, funnily enough, it would be better to have a charge, and then you could actually have a plea bargain in order to get out. That sounds ridiculous. That's what happens in America. In America, if you are charged, they are told, plead guilty so that you get a lesser sentence and you can therefore hopefully have some freedom. So the American system is tainted.
Do you think a lot of it goes back to the issue of the arrest? So do you think the Patriot Act itself should be disbanded?
I really don't agree with any of these acts that curtail our freedoms and the way in which America actually have given themselves power to lift anybody in any country and put them away indefinitely, even their own citizens. So, and with drones, they go and kill, they actually execute by drone without any charge. This is what they allow themselves to do. So the unlawfulness of the American system at the moment is at its very worst, and a lot of these acts, including the Patriot Act, should be repealed. So there's so much more that we want to do, but Shaka Amo, British resident, without charge or trial, should be returned now, before he dies. He's over 80 days into his hunger strike. He's lost 32 pounds already. You can see his bones, his body's crumbling. He falls over and they strap him to a board and throw him into a cell. This is a very grave injustice. We want Shaka Amo home now, before he dies.
This is obviously a very important issue to us at Radio Free Brighton and Under the Bridge. And we'd like to think that it's a strong issue for our listeners as well. What would you recommend our listeners do in order to help Shaka Amo's campaign to get out of Guantanamo and come home?
Well, the best thing they can do, everybody, is to write, sounds crazy, but writing letters, write emails, ask to see whichever MP you have. Caroline Nicholson's very much with us. She's been an amazing supporter, but the other MPs haven't shown much interest or concern. So write to David Cameron, write to William Hague. Join us every day outside Parliament. We're going to be there as the new session starts after the state opening of Parliament. We will be outside Parliament every single day with our placards, in our own suits, with our chains, reminding Parliament that until Shaka is free, we won't let them off the hook. We want them to act now. They should send a medical team from the Foreign Office or wherever to see Shaka. They haven't even seen him. They believe the Americans that his health is sound, that he's not in isolation. It's untrue. They believe all the lies that the Americans are telling them. In fact, his lawyer says the American state doesn't know what's going on in Guantanamo. He actually says that in no other American prison are the guards able to get away with assaulting the prisoners. So the whole thing is a complete travesty. We have to do something about it. The government knows. They must act now. And all this thing about Saudi Arabia, perhaps it's all to do with arms. Perhaps they don't want to offend Saudi Arabia because they want to sell them more arms. Well, how outrageous is that? We have to get out of this system of fueling wars and torturing people and putting people out of sight. Let's start being truthful. Let's start a new way that we deal with people, with humanity and with concern.
Well, thank you for your time, and I sincerely hope that the vigils outside Westminster have effect and actually give the British government a kick in the butt to get themselves involved and get Shaka home. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. We'll be outside Parliament Square from the 9th of May onwards. So please, everyone, come and join us.
We will do. That was Joya talking about the important issue of Shaka Amir. I do think it's interesting that it is a British national there and he has such influence. And the idea of the Saudi Arabia, which Joy brought up about trying not to offend them because of arms deals, is upsetting that it's the fact that the US are more interested in their arms deals and business and trade, which obviously every country is interested in business and trade, but at the detriment of their own liberal attitudes is quite a horrifying thought. And I asked about the Patriot Act, and Joy Hector spoke about the effects of these acts and how they are really illegal if you think about it. I mean, they were brought into the Patriot Act. I've always had a problem with. I remember studying it when I was at A level, so when I was 17, 18, and they just seem so bizarre to me, because when similar acts tried to come in the UK, like the 48-day terror law, which would imprison people for 48 days without trial and without charge, when that was suggested by Gordon Brown, there was complete uproar about it. So I do think the Patriot Act should also be brought to question, really. I mean, it was brought in after 9/11 attack, and that was something that obviously horrified and terrified the American public. I mean, it did here. I still remember the day when my dad came to pick me up from primary school and was just in shock and awe, and we got home and was like, you need to look at the news, you need to see what's happening. And I was only 11 when it happened. So it is a really... It was brought in at a time where fear was at its highest, but we've moved on from that stage now. I don't think the terror threat is anywhere near that level. So allowing the police to have wiretaps and search without warrant and arrest without charge, if the Patriot Act was re-examined, and I mean it was re-examined by Barack Obama in 2001 when he signed the Patriot Sunset Extension Act, which was a 4-year extension of the key features of the Patriot Act. I mean, that was just a couple of years ago, and I don't think the terror threat is what it used to be, and it isn't. I mean, obviously, there has been a terrorist attack within the past couple of weeks. But I think it was an act drawn up out of fear, and it was a shock reaction. Like, it happened the next day, the Patriot Act was formed, and it came into law very quickly without much debate because everyone had the same opinion of never again. So I'm not sure whether or not, I mean, Guantanamo Bay is the key issue of today's programme, but I think if the Patriot Act wasn't allowed to be carried out, then it would stop unlawful imprisonment because there would be no chance for unlawful... they'd have to charge people before imprisoning them. So I do think there are a lot of issues that need to be debated and discussed and really changed, to be honest, in American politics towards the issue of terror and just stripping people of their rights out of fear. I mean, it's not something that I'd like to happen here, and I would certainly don't want it to happen anywhere else in the world. The campaign for closure of Guantanamo has affected a large group of people. We've been debating it a lot here at RFB. It's been debated at Westminster. And obviously it's been debated a lot now and spoken about a lot in American politics because of the hunger strikes and because obviously Obama has now come forward and said that this is enough. But a shocking group of people, not shocking because of their ideas, but shocking because of their age range, have actually come forward to support the fight to close Guantanamo. Quite local to us here at RFB actually. Another journalist here at Radio Free Brighton, our very own Missy, has been speaking to young people at the primary school in Lewis who have been working to persuade MPs and government ministers to take action against the US on the issue. And it's quite interesting that people at such a young age get politically active and really, really taking up a banner and really fighting for what they want. So I spoke to Missy earlier on today about her work with now joined the SCORE, and their continued work towards fairness,
and about their relationship with us here at RFB. Now joined by our very own Missy to talk about Guantanamo. Now, Missy's been working with local kids who've been going up to Parliament and talking about Guantanamo. So do you want to tell us a bit more about the kids and their reaction to the whole debacle?
Yeah, absolutely. Yesterday I went up with another of our members of staff. I went up to the Priory School in Lewes to meet the Amnesty group there. Now, this is a group that has been set up by the students of the Priory School after Amnesty did an assembly with them back in September.
So the kids developed the group themselves?
Absolutely. It was very much a people-led organisation. They do have a teacher, Mr. Paul Trudgeon, who's been helping coordinate the group. But it was very much led from the pupils. They set it up, they've kept it running. They're very much in contact with Sarah from Lewes Amnesty Group. They've done assemblies in school. They've been very active with fundraising and campaigning and petitioning. And also, they have been working very hard in the Shaka Armour campaign. So much so that just last week they went up to the Houses of Parliament and met with one of the ministers from the Foreign Office, who I have to say his name escapes me at this moment in time. I apologise for that. But they went up to Parliament and had an audience with him and put across some questions to him. So I went up to Lewes yesterday and spoke to them about that and found out about their experiences, which was really, really interesting.
How old are the kids?
They range from Lewes Primary School is year 11, from year 9 to year 11. So I think the youngest member of the group was a chap called, I think it was his name Samuel, and he was 12. And then the older members are just about to go off on their study leave for their GCSEs, so they're 15, 16. The majority of the group is kind of year 11, but...
I love the fact they're getting them so politically active so young.
Absolutely.
I mean, didn't have that in my school.
To be honest with you, I went up and my conception was there was going to be about 5 or 6. There were 27 young people
in my school.
Group.
We had a thing called Justice and Peace, but we just basically sold fair trade goods, and we just went mad because there was I went to a girls' school and it was chocolate.
Yes, yeah. Oh, do you remember those chocolate crystal cakes everybody used to make? I went to a girls' school as well, and actually, I was just so impressed with how not only how active they were in getting the group organised and keeping the group going. Because as we all know, it's very easy to get enthusiastic about things at the beginning. For a week. But to keep it going for a whole year and keep that motivation going in terms of running a group, organising the group, running campaigns, fundraising. They raised £600 from one batch of fundraising, which was incredible. And so they were just so bright and switched on that their transferable skills, I mean, that was a thing. One of the things about the Amnesty group, it wasn't just about what they're doing for the campaign, it's about all the skills they're gaining. But yes, it was actually a little bit intimidating.
What type of views did they express?
Well, I think one of the things was they felt that the British government was actually just stalling. They weren't really prepared to push the American government. I think they felt very disappointed with that. The impression I got was when they went up to the meeting that the minister was just very much trying to fob off their questions, which they weren't really standing for. Quite interestingly, I think that there was almost some scare tactics going on with the minister saying, well, the thing is, you know, there are bad people in the world. I think words to that effect were bandied about. But as one of the young people said, well, even so, the point is that these people should be entitled to not only a fair trial, but a trial.
In the first place.
And, you know, the torture isn't great. So it isn't a case of being innocent or guilty. It's about the process. So, you know, they're very clear about that.
What was our tactic for the minister to take to then try to just scare the boys and scare the children into thinking?
I think the fact was that they'd boxed the minister into the corner, so he was
swinging just, anywhere to
yeah,
get out.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, they did really well to get that. And I think the whole experience of going out to Parliament was a really interesting thing to see where the processes were made. I think at first they felt, I mean, it was quite interesting. At first they said that the environment was very impressive, but they didn't seem to be overawed by it. They didn't seem to be intimidated by the Houses of Parliament, the actual building.
In the issues than ceremony of it all.
Absolutely, yes, very much so. So that was one of the impressive things about it. So on Monday they're going to come in here and we're going to have a more in-depth chat about that and about the process they went through to get to that point, from that first assembly that Amnesty did to actually being in the Houses of Parliament, having an audience with one of the Ministers of State. And then hopefully they are going to be presenting their own show on a regular basis from Radio Free Brighton. So it will be a case of watch this space.
Yeah, we'll get to hear their views and anger about all things.
Indeed.
Interesting.
Indeed, absolutely. The passion and the intelligence, both intellectual and emotional, was outstanding.
Well, I really look forward to meeting them now on Monday and having a bit of a chat.
Yeah.
I think they'll know more about it than I will.
I was about to say, yes. I'm going to do a lot of homework between now and then, so I'm on top of my game.
We'll just sit in a corner and let the kids get on with it.
I don't think we need to do anything, yes. I think these are young people that will be ruling the world, and the world will be a much better place for it.
Great. Well, thanks, Missy. And we'll be talking to the group of kids next week, and that'll be put a little bit of that on the show. Although
that's
they've got so much to say, they'll have their own show in their own right. So talking to Missy, it's quite interesting to see the young people that it's affecting. That I did study politics when I was in sixth form, but before that, really, I didn't have much input or thought towards political issues, especially ones that were going on in America and all over the world. I was kind of quite locally based, really, just thinking about what's affecting me and the youth groups I was in and stuff. So it wasn't something that I was thinking about, like human rights in throughout the globe. It's really refreshing to see that young people are getting so riled up about it and really want to do something to help. And it will be interesting to see their thoughts and their reactions and listen to them tell their stories about about their time at Parliament. And they're also going to carry on doing their own show, which will be just talking about basically amnesty and human rights issues throughout the globe from a perspective of young people and teenagers, which isn't something that you get really in political journalism or in the mainstream, because I mean, it's not really a voice that's normally had. It's a very small number of young people that take an interest. So I actually am really looking forward to it, and I'm really looking forward to working with them, not just on the Guantanamo issue, but on other things. So that's something to look forward to. But now back to the issue of this week's show, which obviously is Guantanamo. The big case issue for us here, I guess, at the moment, is the campaign for Shaka Amir. Because him being a British citizen, and our government can act on that. They might not have the influence to shut down Guantanamo at all, but they should have the influence to release one of our own citizens, especially since his family are suffering. And I think really democracy in general suffers as long as Guantanamo is open. We have quite a strong connection with the US through trade, and we have something called the special relationship, which I've got in little quotation marks, but you can't see me because this is the radio. So we do have a special relationship, so we should have an impact, really. And the UN have even stepped in. A spokesperson for the UN called the force feeding worrying, which may be the biggest understatement in politics in this year. But I think, besides the campaign of Shaka Amir, we should be campaigning for more. We should be campaigning the release, or if not the release, at the very least, allowing for a fair trial for everyone in Guantanamo, not just a British citizen, but every person there. Because without fair trial, then what is democracy really? And especially since it may be geographically far, but I don't think America's that ideologically far away from us. And I think a lot of our politicians aim to emulate American politics, and it's a worrying thing if they're emulating someone who has such skewed ideas of morality. Next week's show, we'll be back to our normal format of a range of issues, but I think what is going on in Guantanamo and what the campaign that's going on here is so important, and the actions of the Americans have been so repugnant and horrible that it deserves a full hour show. We'll be back next week. But please do write to your MP, to David Cameron or William Hague, or join the Save Shaka Amir campaign outside Parliament.
Goodbye and see you next week.